This week on Barbell Shrugged, we talk about programming, specifically for competition athletes, how to choose the program without picking the wrong one, and energy systems explained.
What's up, guys? It's CTP, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. Make sure you check out our video versions of all these podcasts on our website, fitter.tv. On all of our video versions, we include our Technique Wad, which is our series of technique instruction videos for CrossFitters, free previews of some of the seminars we put out, and then sometimes come out of the studio and have special video segments such as cooking in the kitchen with Brandy that one time and out in the pool with Lucas, and who knows what the next thing we'll do is. So make sure you check out our website, fitter.tv, and watch the videos as well.
All right, guys, welcome to Barbell Shrug. Today, we're going to talk about programming. We've gotten quite a bit of feedback, and it sounds like we're going to put forth a great effort to do something a little more focused than what we've done in the past when talking about programming. We've definitely thrown around a lot of ideas in the past, but we really haven't set out anything too concrete. So we're gonna do our best to do that today. If we fail, it's all Doug's fault.
I'm the fall guy for this one.
That's right. The scapegoat.
Mm-hmm. Says the guy that does all of our programming.
That's right. First, I want to talk a little bit about something Doug is doing. In about a week and a half, it's going to start, is the Faction Foods Nutrition course.
Mm-hmm.
It's free online. You can go to fitter.tv and sign up. There's a little link on there. It's pretty obvious where the link is. Click that, put your name and email in there, and it'll get you signed up for the free webinar. You can kind of see what we do for our nutrition course at Faction.
Mm-hmm. In case it's not obvious, it's right below the newsletter opt-in on the right side of the page. It's a little banner ad that says free nutrition course, and it's got a bunch of vegetables in the background. Just click on the picture, and it'll take you to an opt-in page that has the schedule for the course. It's going to be 8 sessions long, starting Monday, October 15th, and it's going to be from noon till 1 Central Time, Monday through Thursday of the first week, and then again Monday through Thursday of the second week. So it'll be, the 15th through the 25th, I believe, are the dates. 8 sessions total, Monday through Thursday, for 2 weeks in a row. So it's free for the live event. It literally is a live event. If you show up at 12:30, it'll be half over. You'll just have to show up for the second half of that day. But go opt in, and then prior to each one of those days, I'll send you the link and all the information that you need to opt in for the live event for that day. After the entire event is over, All those sessions are going to be packaged together, and we're going to sell that in the Fitter shop for $197. So you can get it for the first time for free, a good amount of value. But if you want to watch it in the future, or if you want to, share it with your friends or whatnot, then you're going to have to buy it after the fact for $197, and then it'll just be available whenever you want to watch it.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we will be talking a little bit about programming today. I mean, all about programming. If anyone's interested in purchasing any programming, we're going to probably put some up for sale on our website. Not probably, we are going to put some up there, some cycles that you might want to purchase. And also, I'm going to offer personalized programming. So if you have individual needs, which I think every individual has individual needs, if you want to go a little bit step beyond just following a blog for your workouts or doing group workouts, you can contact us and we can put something together specifically for you as an individual and something that you're preparing for. As of right now, I program for the Faction weightlifting team, each one of them individually. And then I also program for some ultra marathoners, and I also handle the programming for our competition team and just the regular classes at Faction. So I do a good bit of that programming. I really enjoy it. And I'm always playing around with new things and seeing how we can make athletes better. So, okay.
Good deal.
Yeah.
You've wanted to talk about programming on the podcast with a lot of specific things for a long time. What's the first thing that you wanted to throw out there?
I think you could probably dedicate like an entire show, like till the end of time, on programming only.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Rob Wolf, like dedicates his entire show to nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but we're not going to do that. But we could probably talk a lot about it. I want to talk specifically about CrossFit programming.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about different types of sports, but I want to talk a little bit about CrossFit programming today and kind of where it's gone in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's changed a ton in the last 5 years.
Yeah. I would challenge anyone, just go to CrossFit.com and you can go back to the archives and mm-hmm. go look at what was going on way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered CrossFit early 2007, and I, just like most people, found CrossFit and then started doing CrossFit.com workouts.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there wasn't a lot of variety out there. I think most gyms that were CrossFit gyms just did CrossFit.com.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember when I started running into gyms that didn't do CrossFit.com, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess you could do something other than that. The idea that they were selling on CrossFit.com that I found to be really interesting is that you would be ready for any scenario that life could throw at you at any time.
Mm-hmm.
The volume was relatively low. I had come from a weightlifting background at the time. I'd been training in Olympic lifts. And the volume in CrossFit was actually a lot lower than what I had been training in with weightlifting. What's funny is back then, the volume was lower with CrossFit, and now it's flip-flopped.
Mm-hmm.
So the volume with CrossFit's a lot higher now. So
a lot's changed since the game started in 2007.
Yeah.
I think that was the big driver there that Absolutely. Started influencing the programming was... everyone started competing in events, and then the volume had to go up because you had to start to be able to do multiple events in a day, multiple days in a row.
Right. Yeah, if all you were training for was one single 10-minute event, you know, you might not need to train longer than a half hour there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have to do, you know, five, you know, 10-minute events in a single day mm-hmm. and be able to, you know, have a high power output, even to that last one, you know, yeah, you've got to do a lot more volume. So, yeah, the programming has been dictated by the CrossFit games, I feel like,
mm-hmm.
on CrossFit.com specifically, and then with other gyms, too.
How has the role of strength changed, strength training specifically? People kind of define CrossFit as competing in Metcons. That's kind of how I define it, anyway. And being good at Metconning with moderate weight is heavily influenced by what your one rep max is or just by how strong you are in general. And back in the day, they didn't do as much strength training as I feel like people do now. And why do you feel like that is? Yeah, or do you feel like
that is? There were dedicated days, and there still are on CrossFit.com, dedicated days where they do single reps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, low repetition, you know, seven sets of three or seven sets of one or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, I don't feel like it's changed that much, the ratio of strength work to conditioning. I think the conditioning sessions, the volume has gone way up, so maybe... You could say it's not that the strength has gone down. Strength volume on CrossFit.com, I think, has stayed about the same, but the conditioning volume has really gone up.
Mm-hmm.
I think people who are competing in CrossFit have to do more strength work.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be competitive at a CrossFit Games level, I mean, they're having to rep out, you know, deadlifts with 315 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 345 was the weight for some of the deadlift in the Metcons?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the higher your one rep max is, obviously, the easier that weight's going to feel.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there's a lot of guys who they don't really test their one rep max that much, but they have to have that requisite amount of strength. Mm-hmm. So I would say the CrossFit Games does not test strength, but mm-hmm. You do have to be strong to even be there. So you have to have at least a requisite amount of strength.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think what anyone should do is go, oh, I have that requisite amount of strength. I don't need to get any stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be, you know, especially as you see CrossFit Games progress, you know, you may actually get tested on strength at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, if you're doing deadlifts in a Metcon with 345 and you only deadlift 300 pounds, well, endurance doesn't even factor in. You're just not strong enough.
You're in trouble.
If you deadlift 400 pounds... You know, if you could probably do, you know, with 345, we'll say you could do 8 reps in a row with it or whatever. But if you deadlift 500 or 600 pounds, which 600 pounds might be excessive, but if you deadlift 500 pounds, then, you know, doing 20 reps in a row and then moving on to the next thing might not be a problem.
Right.
So you do need that requisite amount of strength, and it's going to, seems like it's gone up over the years.
Yeah. Every year, the requisite amount of strength is higher.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess I would say they're not testing strength. They're not comparing one the strength of one individual versus another, but like you every year you have to be stronger just to be competitive. So yeah, like the average CrossFit Games athlete for the men, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, most of them could deadlift over 500. Yeah. You know, if they were, they all squat over 400, you know, stuff like that. There's probably a few that aren't, and there's probably a few that are in excess, you know, that are squatting 500 plus. I don't know what Rob Orlando does. But, I mean, you look at Rich Froning, the dude snatches, what, I think he snatched like 285 in nanos.
Yeah.
Like, that's like almost national level weightlifting numbers. Not almost, it is. So, I mean, he could probably you know, go barefoot and go compete at nationals.
Yeah.
USAW. But I think like a lot of people are they do a lot more strength now than they used to. Just out of necessity.
Yeah. You can't do touch and go snatches with 185 if you don't snatch well into the twos.
Yeah.
You got to be strong enough and have good enough technique in the case of a snatch to be able to rep out those what I would call moderate loads, even though that's still probably pretty heavy for most people, snatching 185. And that's single digit numbers for most people.
Right. Yeah, most people can't snatch 200. You know, being able to snatch 185 for reps is going to be a big issue.
So what do you see as the kind of the base numbers for competitive CrossFitters these days for the big lift, snatch, clean and jerk, you know, front squat, deadlift?
I think you need to be for someone going to the games.
Sure.
I think you need to be snatching 245, clean and jerk, clean jerk 315 plus. What else do you say? Back squat?
Sure. Front squat, back squat, deadlift.
Oh, yeah. Deadlift five. I know a lot of CrossFit 500 athletes pounds. Who don't test the deadlift very often. I know I don't either. But most likely, if you're squatting or if you're snatching 245 and clean jerking 315, I'd be shocked if you couldn't pick 500 pounds off the ground. As far as back squatting, yeah, I mean, probably in the 450 range, and front squat probably, again, that's going to be correlated to your front, to your clean also. So you're probably front squatting 350 plus.
At least.
Yeah, 365 probably.
Yeah.
So, and that's just, you know, just to get to the games. And that's why a lot of people, I talked to, and a lot of people are a lot more accepting of it. Because when you watch the CrossFit Games, you're like, oh my God, these guys are super strong. You know, I was saying this a couple of years ago was, you know, if you want to go to the games, it's probably a 2-year journey at least. Because you got to get strong enough first. You know, if you weren't a strength athlete first, it's going to be, you know, you can't, you know, just do some strength and a bunch of conditioning. Expected to get to the games, it's not going to happen.
So would you say for a newer athlete focusing on strength, well, not neglecting your conditioning, but focusing on strength for the first, you know, year or two is their primary, the primary thing that will push them to the next level and make them possibly compete in the future?
Oh yeah. I think I want to say even for myself, I've always felt that way, that that strength needed to be addressed first. And I think I probably even program too much strength and not enough conditioning because I was trying to be so aggressive with the strength side of things. But through some playing around, and I've been programming for 5 years now, I've kind of learned how to balance out the conditioning volume with the strength volume, where people are setting, you know, if they're relatively new to strength training, they're setting PRs constantly and their conditioning is stays real high. So when it comes time to switch over to, you know, pre-games conditioning, it's not like, you know, a big kick in the nuts, it's, you know, like it can be. I've kind of discovered recently how to get people to do a lot of volume, you know, conditioning volume, working on work capacity while they're still working on getting stronger. And that's kind of what we're doing with the faction athletes right now. The guys that are in competition cycle, we're working on getting their one rep maxes really high. And their work capacity for, you know, the long duration WADs, you know, without breaking them down. We're not really working on their speed right now. So they're just kind of almost like getting in shape to be fast and strong. So
okay. So to provide, to give us more perspective, excuse me, on where they're at right now, what does their entire year look like? Because CrossFit kind of originally was to be prepared for anything at any time. And that's funny because now there's the games and there's like a season.
It's a very specific time, right? Down to the day.
Got
to
prepare for anything in July.
On July 14th right. at 9 a.m.
Right. So now there's a season. So usually when there's a season, people, you know, kind of periodize their program, depending on how you're using that word. They focus on one thing during, you know, the specific months leading up to the season. So, where are they at right now?
I think that explains the volume issue too. I think that when you got to be ready for, if you got to be ready for something tomorrow, you can't do this giant hero wad, you know, yesterday, and I got to be ready for something today. Mm-hmm. I think that's why the volume was low back in the day. I mean, that's just my own theory. I don't know if that's, you know, if that's whoever's programming CrossFit.com is thinking, oh, well, now we're preparing for the games, so now we can program this big volume on this side of the year and lower volume on this side of the year.
Oh, like people they used to not know if they were going to have just a killer wad tomorrow, and so they did moderate stuff every day because they didn't know what was coming up the next day.
I would say the volume was lower. Like, you're more likely to run into, like, you know, 15 or minute or less wads than you are now, this time of year. So,
okay. So what's their whole year look like?
So right after competition, a lot of skill work. We kind of deload or unload, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And they spend a lot of time kind of healing. I know for a lot of our athletes, their shoulders were taxed pretty heavily. Mm-hmm. Shoulders are pretty susceptible to injury. I mean, if you were to pick a joint and say which joint you think is the most susceptible to injury, for most people, it's going to be their shoulders. So we spent a lot of time, say we spent about 6 weeks after competition, just doing movements that are much more shoulder friendly, and then just lower volume, just basically almost kind of like a post rehab type thing for people's shoulders.
Okay. So what movements tend to be very hard on people's shoulders that you find in competition, and then what movements do you use to still get some work done and still, you know, build some fitness and some strength, but are easier on the joint so you can kind of rest after that highly competitive, high volume phase.
Yeah, the stuff that's going to put a lot of stress on the shoulders is basically anything hanging from a bar. Mm-hmm. And part of that, you can minimize your potential for injury when hanging from a bar by doing things like staying hollow when you do kipping pull-ups and stuff like that. But people get fatigued. I mean, even I know I should stay hollow. That's going to help protect, you know, my joints. Mm-hmm. But, 100 reps in on pull-ups, you know, you're pretty much just flailing around to try and get your chin over the bar, especially at a competition sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So what's that mean for everyone that doesn't know what being hollow means?
Basically keeping your core tight. If you watch gymnasts doing anything and they got that hollow position where their abs are really tight, keeping their back nice and flat, that's basically core stability. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times core stability gets talked a lot about in the CrossFit community when you're lifting a load, but it's not talked a lot about when you're doing things like pull-ups. I think not every coach neglects it. I do hear people talk about it. It's not like nobody does it, but there's an overemphasis on lifting and an underemphasis on gymnastics stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's more than just protecting your back. It's protecting your whole body.
Mm-hmm. Hang on a bar. Vertical pulling movements.
Yeah, anything hanging from a bar, really. I mean, toes to bar. I feel like those are real nasty because people like to kip real big on those. Mm-hmm. Muscle-ups can be taxing on shoulders. Mm-hmm. Just pretty much anything hanging from a bar. And some overhead barbell movements, too. They can be, if you're doing a lot of jerks and putting a lot of weight overhead. And some of that's going to depend on how flexible your shoulders are. If you lack mobility in your shoulders and you did a ton of overhead barbell work, you're going to be a high risk for injury. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like, gaining mobility on the front end will save your shoulders on the back end too, though.
Mm-hmm. If you lack mobility in your upper back or your shoulders, you're going to take a lot more damage on all those overhead movements. Be it pressing, you know, pushing, jerking, push press, things like that, or hanging from a bar, vertical pulling. Anything straight over your head, your shoulders are going to take a lot more stress if you lack mobility in your shoulder.
Right.
Or your upper back.
Yeah. Yeah, I know guys that have, you know, they have great mobility, and they hardly ever run into shoulder issues. Mm-hmm. You know, they may get some stuff going on when they do too much, I feel like too much kipping. Mm-hmm. But so what we do for like 6 weeks afterwards, we avoid hanging from the bar at all. Mm-hmm. A lot of the athletes kind of complain, like, oh, I feel like my pull-ups are going away. I'm like, well, probably have to build them up again a little bit, but we're just trying to save your shoulders for the long term. We do a lot of barbell rows, a lot of dumbbell rows, like single arm rows. So a lot of lateral pulling versus that way you're not losing all that strength. It's the same muscle groups. And then I like to keep rows in the workouts pretty regularly. That's something you're not going to find in a lot of programs.
So forward and back pressing and pulling tends to be a lot easier on your shoulders than up and down vertical pressing and pulling.
Yeah.
It's an easy way to sum that up. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I you want to keep it pretty balanced throughout the year. And it's, again, as you get closer to the games, you want to do more of the overhead stuff and less of the other, just to be prepared for, you know, it's a sport specificity type issue. But what they'll do is we'll take a break from things like that. We'll do Turkish get-ups. I feel like that's really good on the shoulders. And then also, so we spent all that 6 weeks kind of unloading, letting people take a break. I encourage people to, like, do random stuff. Go play Ultimate Frisbee, you know. Maybe, you know, take a week off, go on vacation. Don't worry about, you know, finding a gym while you're there and training, stuff like that. After that, it's kind of like a getting ready to train. You know, that's when we start doing like five sets of five on back squats, stuff like that. And maybe doing almost kind of like doing, we're doing cycles throughout the year. You know, we'll have a few months where we focus more on getting people's work capacity up. They might gain a little bit of weight there, a little bit of muscle mass. They're going to be doing higher reps with relatively heavy weight. That's when you're going to be doing like five sets of five, heavy back squats, stuff like that.
So the main goal with that second phase, after they kind of recover a little bit after that first 6 weeks, the main goal of the second phase was what again?
It's kind of hard to say. Prepare the body to be ready for training again.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a preparatory phase. So the other one, the first phase is kind of like taking a break from training, letting the body heal. The second phase is kind of preparing the body for the volume that it's gonna get hit with. So you start ramping up the volume, try to make sure you stay away from things that are going to injure people again. I mean, that's also all the way year round. You know, you're watching the athletes, making sure you're not over programming anything that's going to tear them up. I've been playing a little bit with something this year. We've been doing a lot of find your rep max. So we would do like a few months ago, we were doing 5 rep max and then find 90% of that. Finding 5 rep max, then 90% of that for 4 sets of 5. We kind of been ramping down, and what we've been doing is kind of lowering the intensity. I've been working on getting everyone's, we're in a phase of training right now where we're trying to get the 1 rep max as high as possible. So I used to do that more frequently. I used to say once every quarter we would work into a phase where we're really focused on 1 rep maxes. And right now we're only going to focus on that it's for a longer period of time, but just once this year. So once in the macro cycle. So you got macro cycle, which is the year-long cycle. Mesocycle would be like we would break it up into quarters and then or weeks, and then microcycles is like, you know, a week or two at a time.
So the mesocycle is like each one of these phases that we're talking about.
Right.
And then the microcycle is just how you program week by week.
Week to week, yeah.
Okay.
So and our mesocycles are set up in 4-week cycles. So we'll do 3 weeks of pretty tough work, followed by an unloading week. So it's 3 weeks tough, 1 week unloading, and we cycle that way. And each cycle has its own goal. So kind of the goal right now is in this mesocycle and our microcycle is to really focus on 1 rep max strength, which on game day, like, it is beneficial to have a high 1 rep max, but that's not what we're going to be. This would be a bad time for us to compete. We would not want to go. I would not want to send anyone into competition having focused a lot on just 1 rep maxes. So they're focused on that, and they're also doing a decent amount of volume on conditioning. So they're not going to be really, really. I say if you throw Frayne at them, they may not be PRing right now, but they may do better on a longer WOD, a longer rigorous WOD, and they might do real well on a 1 rep max on a back squat or a front squat. But you throw the typical CrossFit competition at them, and, you know, something in the 10-minute range, it may not, you know, in the 3 to 10-minute range, it may not be as good. Now, as the year goes on, we progress towards January, you know, that's when we're going to start looking more at changing, getting away from working on that one rep max and work on, let's increase our five rep max, or maybe even our eight rep max.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get that moderate load. Let's see how many times we can move that before failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to try and increase that. Our conditioning sessions will actually get, we'll actually lower the volume a little bit on that, because I don't want them doing an hour long conditioning session to mm-hmm. prepare for a 10 minute AMRAP. And that's just mm-hmm. not smart. You're basically teaching people to move slow. So what we'll do is we'll set up with a lot shorter intervals as it gets closer.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be more aerobically taxing, or I won't say aerobically taxing. That's wrong. It's cardiovascularly taxing.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna feel more of that we talked about this earlier. And people at home don't know this. The metabolic acidosis. They'll probably experience a lot more of that.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, when you do Fran and you feel terrible. We'll probably be doing a lot more of that as competition gets closer.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're not really pushing that too much.
What's McGee call that? Is that balls training for him?
Balls?
Yeah, balls training.
I don't know.
Like, you'd have balls just to show up. those are the workouts that hurt. Those are the ones that really put you under. Like, your heart rate goes through the roof, and every muscle you have just fucking burns, and then you'd lay there for 25 minutes afterward trying not to throw up.
Yeah.
Those are balls workouts. I think that's what he's been calling them lately.
I think that's an accurate description.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the programming we're doing now is just, maybe if you wanted to name it something, it would be grit training.
There you go.
It's like you show up and you just got to grind until it's finished. You know, we try to break it up into intervals and stuff like that, but it's...
That's for the longer.
You're doing a workouts. Lot of reps right now. And so as we get closer, the workouts will, the volume will go down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We'll still have high volume workouts programmed in, you know, once a week it'll hit and it'll be tough, but we'll be much more prepared for the 10 minute work, you know, events than we are right now. Come, you know, we'll start ramping up in around January for that.
Mm-hmm. That's in preparation for the open?
For regionals. So mm-hmm. the assumption is, the end goal is really to go to the games for right. everybody.
Right.
And for our team specifically, I think we placed seventh in the open. And the top
seventh.
30 teams go. So I'm not too concerned about us placing real well, well enough to get to regionals. So
you're trying to peak for regionals, and the open is just...
Yeah, the open is just there.
It's assumed you're going to do well enough to make it.
Right. If we are not good enough to make it to regionals, then, you know, we didn't deserve to go in the first place. Like, I don't feel like we need to peak for the open. You know, some people may not be happy about that, because a lot of people put a lot of, you know, they're like, oh, I want to do real well in the open. I want people to do well in the open.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not going to, like, crush people. Like, if they're going to do the open WOD on Saturday, I don't want to crush them on Friday. You know, we'll probably take a break. I do want them to do well during the open, too.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to be at their peak until regionals, for sure. So,
okay. Regionals is April.
You know what? They haven't announced it.
April, May.
Yeah, as a CrossFit coach, it make it pretty tough, because you got an idea when it's gonna be. It's gonna be in the spring. But right. You know, knowing the exact date is pretty tough. And as of right now, it being October, it's not real important for me to know which week it is.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
It would be nice, but it's not a make or break program type thing. We can adjust, you know, if I could probably adjust with about a month, knowing about a month in or out. You know, they could change it on me and it wouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah.
As it gets closer, it becomes a bigger deal, obviously.
Okay. So like in 30 seconds, can you sum up the entire off season from beginning to end?
What do you consider in the off season? Say after regionals.
The time in between the competitions. So after the games to the beginning of the open or regionals, all that off season time.
All right, you basically have an unloading phase where you're healing up from anything you may have gotten banged up on.
Okay. That's phase one.
Yep, phase one.
Okay.
Strength and volume training. So strength training along with work capacity. And then you're going to move from that into more high-speed work, more power work, shorter intervals, more cardiovascular taxing as it gets closer. So the volume will dwindle down a little bit, the total volume. So not every single day will the volume be low, but If you look at the total volume for the week, it's going to get smaller and smaller as it gets closer.
Okay. So if I heard you correctly, you're starting off with healing up after competition, you know, making sure that you don't have achy joints and any nagging injuries. That way you can start training fresh. And then after that phase, you're trying to increase max strength, and most of your conditioning is longer duration, slightly lower intensity. And then as you get closer to competition.
And that's more about the repetition than it is the time that it takes. So just getting people used to doing like,
so they're doing
200 squats,
more kettlebell
workout.
Swings and bodyweight squats and burpees and things like that for those longer workouts.
They still may do thrusters and they're going to do weighted stuff, but yeah, it's not going to be, they may end up doing a lot more reps than what you would typically find in a CrossFit workout.
Okay. So higher rep workouts,
yeah,
for the conditioning, but for the strength stuff, you're trying to build max strength, increase your 1 to 5 rep maxes.
Right.
And then as you build towards competition, then you're starting to do the shorter, heavier type Metcons, the things that are going to give you more of that acidic burn and that, right, that super high heart rate, like the super high intensity CrossFit workouts that you would find typical, right, of a CrossFit competition.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's an example of a type of workout like that? Just to provide something specific.
Something that's going to cause a lot of burn. Something you'd find in a CrossFit competition.
Sure. Like a heavy Metcon that you would do, you know, leading up to competition. So we just talked about doing, you know, you said 200 squats, like in a WOD would be the longer, lighter competition, or WOD that you would do during that phase two. But during phase three, are you doing 21-15-9 with 275 deadlifts and
burpees,
weighted pull-ups? Is that the type of stuff you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, you may not be doing
like weighted dead hang pulls with 50 pounds.
You talking about the final phase there?
I was just making something up. Really?
No, I wouldn't probably. I'd be less likely to program weighted pull-ups right before the competition, more likely to program kipping pull-ups.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want to move faster. So I want to involve more muscle groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the phase of training we're in now, farther mm-hmm. out, we're more likely to do, I wouldn't call it isolated movements, but
mm-hmm.
Less full body movements. And as we get closer to CrossFit competition, that's when we want to see, instead of a dead hang pull-up, I want to see kipping pull-ups. Mm-hmm. You're more likely to see dead hang pull-ups now. And as we get closer to the season and into that, I want people to be moving faster. The weight might be relatively heavy. A 275 deadlift wouldn't be bad. 21-15-9, I'd rather see that. You know, deadlifts and pull-ups,
mm-hmm.
Kipping pull-ups instead of weighted pull-ups. Maybe something like burpees,
mm-hmm.
Something that can almost be done unbroken. So if someone has to fall off the bar and take a break to finish those reps, then it's probably not ideally programmed for them because they can't get that same metabolic demand that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So not, and there might be, there are going to be some days in there where we're not looking for that big, you know, acid burn that CrossFit is usually known for. You know, you don't want to do that every single day, but
mm-hmm.
As we get closer, we're going to have more days like that.
Okay. All right. So we talked a lot about competition athletes and how you program for them. What about people that are just doing CrossFit because they think it's fun and increases their fitness and it's more of a lifestyle and less, and they're less concerned about competing? How should they be training and how do you program for the regular classes at Faction?
For the regular classes, our goal there is the same goal that, you know, say CrossFit, if you go to a CrossFit journal and kind of read about like what is CrossFit, like the whole goal of CrossFit is to equally train strength, endurance, power, speed, coordination, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We want to look at the three metabolic pathways. We want to train all three metabolic pathways. We want people to be, you know, train the phosphocreatine, glycolytic pathway and the mm-hmm. oxidative pathway.
Mm-hmm.
We want to like have all those skills, train all the pathways, and then so when I'm programming for them, what I've seen most, and I program off of the feedback I'm getting, and feedback might be me just being in the gym and watching people train and seeing their numbers or comments on the blog. And what I find to be true most of the time is most people are just not very strong. So we can build up their endurance really fast. You know, mm-hmm. their aerobic pathway is technically pretty easy to train.
Mm-hmm.
but most of them are not very strong at all. Mm-hmm. So we start off every training session with strength work. Mm-hmm. And we do, what I found actually, we made a, I wouldn't say it's a mistake, but we just kind of learned through programming that we always do strength work with some kind of power also. Might be doing some kind of jumps or throwing something in between doing squats or mm-hmm. push press or press. Mm-hmm. That's also when we work on some Olympic lifts. Mm-hmm. But what people would do is they would sandbag the strength side, because when they went over to Metcon, they wanted to post a fast time on the board. Mm. So they didn't want to like...
They want to get tired.
They didn't want to get tired before they did their conditioning.
Okay.
So I think people were de-emphasizing the strength, not because they don't think it's important, but because I think they judge themselves and they feel like other people judge them on their conditioning time. Mm-hmm. So like people want to post a fast Fran.
Right.
Not because they want to post a fast Fran, but because they want to beat the next guy.
Right.
And I was saying this the other day is,
yeah,
I think I've discovered that people like they're more likely to be intrinsically motivated for strength mm-hmm. and extrinsically motivated for Metcon stuff. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is people like when they set a PR on back squat, they're really excited for themselves. Mm-hmm. And they may post it on Facebook or whatever. And they want people to know. Mm-hmm. But they're not trying to beat the guy next to them. They're not like, oh, I got to squat more than Tommy today, because if I don't, I'm going to feel like a real pansy. Mm-hmm. But if you're really competing against yourself on that stuff. What I find on the conditioning mm-hmm. side is they're not real happy. And maybe it's because we don't do a lot of repeat workouts.
Mm-hmm. I think part of that might be, too, is that on the strength side of things, they're more intrinsically motivated, because I think it's easier to know if you're going to beat somebody on the strength side of things. There's only so many things that we do, really. It's like, oh, yeah, he cleans better than I do. Or yeah, he squats or deadlifts more than I do. And there's less like, I wonder who's going to win today.
Right.
And on the Metcon side of things, you see a wad and you're like, I can do that. I could probably do it better than him. And you have no idea who's going to win.
It's true. Yeah.
So there's a lot more wondering and then
it's
having,
more up
having
in the air.
To.
It's yeah. like, I was always, it's like, I'm good at these three things, but the double unders, I'm not so good at that. And
right.
And so might be able to catch up to them on that one thing.
Right. There's so much more variety that, yeah, it's more up in the air. They're not really sure think, who's going to win that day.
I think there's a lot more, you know, competition going on the Metcon side of things. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I think people were sandbagging the strength side. So mm-hmm. what we did to change that was I started it with the competition team. I started doing like find your 5 rep max or your 4 rep max. And then mm-hmm. you're going to go 90% of that and do this or that.
Right.
And I was programming that for them for a different reason, because I wanted them to be able to do, I wanted them to learn how to be a little more neuromuscular efficient, mm-hmm. and I wanted them to learn how to push hard, especially for find your 1 rep max. And then do 4 more sets of that at 90%. I mean, you got to learn how to push hard. But for the regular folks, it ended up kind of being a really good thing, because what they would do is now mm-hmm. they got to find their 5 rep max. Instead of doing back squats, 5 sets of 5 heavy, mm-hmm. whatever they thought heavy was, mm-hmm. they now have an exact number, an exact prescription for heavy.
Yeah.
So an exact prescription for heavy is, you know, your 3 rep max. Now mm-hmm. find 90% of that and do, you know, 4 more sets of 3 at mm-hmm. that 3 rep max.
Yeah, I like the way that it's programmed with the, you know, writing down that it's a 5 rep max and then you're taking a percentage of it. It does make people go heavier. I thought this went without saying, but you know, years ago we would write down you're going to do 3 sets of 5 or whatever on the board, and I would just assume that everyone knew that that meant you're going to build up to the heaviest set of 5
oh, yeah.
that you could do. And people don't know that. Like, you have to tell them. And even right. if I tell them once, you know, it's just not a part of how they think yet, because they're just not, you know, used to being around
the environment, you know,
like we are. And they haven't done it for years, so they don't remember when you tell them things. Anyway, people would not build up to the heaviest set of 5 they could do. They would just do 3 sets of 5 in 2 or 3 minutes with almost no rest in between. They'd be like, I did it.
Yeah. Or
and
they would
like,
go
what
like,
do you mean?
Their first set would be 135, their second set would be 185, and their third set would be 225.
I'm like, yeah. I'm like, and they just stop when it got kind of heavy.
I was like,
instead of adding change.
One of the rules that I have as far as like if we're not doing a rep max and then a percentage of that mm-hmm. is if you change the weight greater than 10%, mm-hmm. then you went too light on the front, the first set, and that one doesn't count anymore.
Okay.
So if you fall outside that 10% range, mm-hmm. say I say 5 sets of 5 mm-hmm. and you end up doing your 5th set, but it was greater than 10% of your first set, that mm-hmm. first set doesn't count anymore. you mm-hmm. obviously weren't working very hard. And so now mm-hmm. you got to do another set.
All right. I used to tell people if you could complete it, if you could do all five reps, then you had to go heavier. Even if it was just a 2.5 on each side or whatever, you had to go heavier. And if you got only 3 reps the next set, no big deal. You know, just take it back down and you can do all the rest of the sets with that, with the weight you used the first time. But just add 2.5s or whatever you feel like you can do, get a spotter and just try it. And if you miss, no big deal. And if you don't miss, fantastic, you did heavier.
Yeah, make sure you got a spotter. A yeah. good one.
That's another thing that I used to assume people would do when I was first starting off coaching large groups of people, was I just assumed that when it got heavy, people would spot each other. But they don't know that, and it's the coach's job to tell them. And I learned, you know, right off the bat, like, oh, wow, like I have to coach spotting also every time we do something heavy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're new people. They don't know.
That's right.
And I was new to coaching, and so I didn't know to do that. And so I had to learn that one. You know, kind of not really the hard way, because nothing really bad ever happened, but I didn't know that I didn't know until I saw people spotting somebody kind of just by standing behind them and reaching their arms out like this, and the person's like a foot in front of their arms, and they kind of go over there and like try to help them up when something bad happens. That's not spotting, that's just hoping they won't drop it.
Communicate with the person who's spotting you before you lift. So if you walk up behind me and try to spot me, I'll probably have in my head that I'm going to dump this weight. I might end up dumping weight on you if you walk up behind me. I don't know you're there. Mm-hmm. So I may not want a spotter. So have that communication too. All right, with that, we're going to take a little bit of a break. Watch this technique wad. We'll be back. Welcome back, guys. Hope you enjoyed that technique wad. We decided to put Doug back in there.
I hadn't been on technique wad in a while. I had to reintroduce myself as the host of the show, excuse me.
I do exist.
Mm-hmm. I still know stuff.
So one of the things we want to talk about was biggest. We kind of wrote it on the board as biggest CrossFit programming mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk, I guess, more about the mistake, a pretty typical mistake of an athlete. And I think most athletes go through this at some point. Mm-hmm. Is they just pick a blog or a program to follow, just a random program. Because maybe they like the coach, maybe like what the coach had to say at some point, or their buddies are doing it, or something like that. And picking a program for yourself is really important. The best program is going to be the program that's designed specifically for you.
Mm-hmm.
Most people aren't going to do that because it gets expensive. I know we charge in the $300 to $400 a month range for programming, for individualized programming.
Mm-hmm.
And most people can access a program online for free.
Mm-hmm.
So
what kind of things should people be looking for if they're wanting an individualized programming? What's individual about it? What are they like, what is changed in the program for them, or potentially could be changed?
Your goals. Okay. So if your goals vary from what's on the blog, then you know, that's a huge one right there.
Mm-hmm.
Each individual has their own goals. There's a lot of blogs dedicated to preparing athletes for the CrossFit Games.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pretty much talking about that right now. There's mm-hmm. blogs out there that are dedicated to endurance and stuff like that. I think those are even, you need to be even more careful about, because they're not preparing you for your race.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're not preparing you for your weightlifting meet.
Mm-hmm.
But with CrossFit, it's usually leading up to the Games.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be kind of safe with that.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you're following a random program, you wouldn't necessarily be peaking at the right time.
Correct.
Because it's not programmed for the date of your competition if
right.
you're an athlete.
Right.
What about like injury status, or specific skills you need to work on, or what about things like body type or gender? Are these things that people need to consider?
Absolutely. I think that injury is a big one. We get people all the time. They usually get injured doing something stupid. Like, they don't get injured in the gym. They get injured going, I was skateboarding last week, and I fell off, and I hurt my wrist.
Okay.
So I can't do this or that now. Mm-hmm. But anyways, your program should try to avoid that. Something we talked about at the beginning of the program, some people are going to be more prone to shoulder injury, or they mm-hmm. have a shoulder restriction. And so we may minimize certain movements. We may say, hey, you can do a lot of rows, but we're not going to have you doing a lot of pull-ups until we get this restriction fixed.
I've heard people say things like that. They come in, they're like, oh, my shoulders hurt so bad, and I got to do 100 pull-ups today. And I'm like, no, you don't. What are you talking about? Yeah. You don't have to do that.
I've seen a lot of people follow different programs, not just ours, but following a general program for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I follow a blog. Mm-hmm. Oh, my shoulder really hurts. Well, I'm still going to do the 100 pull-ups today. I'm like,
why?
Like, no, you should. Critical thinking skills. Practice that.
Yeah, talking people out of doing the workouts is harder than convincing people to do workouts sometimes.
Yes.
If you have super motivated people.
So injuries definitely play a role. Mobility plays a role. This happens a lot with weightlifters. So when I program for weightlifters, it happens a lot. They may have really poor ankle mobility. So we're not going to do a certain type of, you know, I may not have them do overhead squats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need overhead squats eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't program it yet because it's going to totally, you know, it'll just injure them. It'll end up hurting them somewhere down the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Mobility is huge.
So, yeah, mobility has to be taken into consideration. Mm-hmm. So if you have a restriction somewhere and you're following a regular blog and you're going to do it no matter what, you're going to get injured. It's pretty much guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not today or tomorrow, but a month from now, 2-3 months, you know, it'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to get some individual prescription maybe for exercise selection to avoid restrictions. And then you probably need to be given some kind of mobility. Like I tell people all the time, you know, we give them mobility homework.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they meet with us, they get a mobility assessment, mm-hmm. and then we tell them how to, you know, do this 5 times a day, you know, more if you can, until you get rid of this restriction, and then you can do the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we do individual one-on-one assessments with pretty much everyone that signs up at our place to let them figure out what kind of restrictions they have and exactly what to do about it on the first day.
That's probably one of the hardest things with, like, remote coaching. Like, I want to get into coaching people remotely and programming for people, and that's going to be the hardest part is, you know, having them say they live in California or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, figuring out if they really have a shoulder restriction and which muscles or whatever, what's short, what they really need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be the most challenging part.
Which I hadn't thought about this until just now, but if you're going to pursue online remote coaching in the future, we probably should have people just be able to watch the entire maximum mobility seminar and just go through the entire process, fill out the sheet, maybe record all the tests that they do, and then just send it back to us. That way you have an idea from the front end, just like we would do in-house at Faction, exactly what their restrictions are.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
If you want to know where your restrictions are, then that's a great product for you to pick up. It's a, you know, a complete mobility system where you figure out exactly which joints need more range of motion, and then as part of the seminar, show exactly how to stretch to get rid of those restrictions, and I tell you why those restrictions will get you hurt and exactly where in the future. So if that's something that you want to work on, increasing your mobility, but you just don't know where you are immobile, you might know some places you're immobile. Like, you know, everyone kind of has an idea if they have flexible hamstrings, for example. They think, oh, yeah, I'm really flexible, or I don't have any flexibility in that particular area. But some areas you may have never thought about. So if mobility is something that you have a concern with, then I highly recommend you check out that mobility seminar, Maximum Mobility in the Fitter Store.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think... Yeah, when we do remote coaching, I think I might start just sending that out to people right off the bat. That'd be like initial assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing too is like, where are you coming from? You know, if you've been doing triathlons your whole life and now you want to compete in CrossFit, you know, we may want to focus on strength for a while, you know? And if you're following a blog where they do strength twice a week and they're doing a whole lot of conditioning the rest of the time, that may not be the program for you. And vice versa, if you're an Olympic weightlifter and now you're doing, you know, now you're doing a blog, you know, and they've got you doing, starting every day off with squats and presses and stuff, it's like, you probably don't need any of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may need to lift once a week just to maintain and do some good stuff with to keep everything nice and healthy, but you know, you may need to dedicate most of your time to conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of depending on where you're coming from, you know, that's going to help with program selection as well. And even if you do select a program that's going to work good for you, most likely, you know, I know that a lot of coaches, what they do is they stick with whoever their best athlete is that they're, you know, in their gym or that follows the blog and posts the comments. They stick with the best athlete, and that's who they're programming for. So you may be getting really excellent programming, and it may be 80% as good of what you could get from an individual program.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you do make the right choice and you take a lot of things into consideration, you do the best job you can, they may only get you 80%, 90% there.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
yeah. So it's not like following a blog doesn't do anything or doesn't work. You're not saying that. You're just saying it's better to get individualized programming.
There's a lot of great programs out there. I mean,
mm-hmm.
There's some guys I really trust. You know, there's definitely some blogs out there. One is like CrossFit Football,
mm-hmm.
and John Wellborn. I mean, if you've ever heard him talk about programming, the guy knows what he's talking about. He just didn't pull this stuff out of his ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to be smart about it. And if you don't have any mobility issues, you're probably not going to get injured on his program.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certain coaches I like better than others for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I won't run through like a bunch of coaches I don't like.
Okay.
I don't think there are any. I think we had this conversation yesterday and you were talking about, coaches being judgmental of each other, and I thought what you said was super insightful.
I was basically pointing out that oftentimes you hear coaches criticizing other coaches for the way they're coaching a certain athlete or the way they're programming, but the coach that's doing or being critical of the other coach oftentimes has no idea the feedback that he's getting from his athletes or what he has already tried with those athletes. So over the years, I've been more likely to give other coaches the benefit of the doubt if they say something that I know in most situations probably isn't spot on, because I don't know what the situation is fully. I don't know if he's already tried the three or four things that I think he should think of first with that athlete, and the athlete didn't connect with those things, or the athlete has an injury, or the athlete has a mobility restriction, or whatever. So I've been more likely these days to, instead of like criticize that person or go to the athlete afterward and be like, you know, hey, that guy, you know, he told you this, but you probably should think about this first. Like go behind their back and like try to help out. I've been more likely to go to them and say, I saw what you're doing, you know, not being critical of your advice, but why did you choose that thing, or what's the situation with that athlete? And then oftentimes after I hear the situation, I'm like, oh, okay, what you said makes sense.
Right.
Granted, there's still coaches out there that just don't know anything, or they're relatively new to coaching, or they think they know it all, but really they're kind of misguided or whatever. There's bad coaches and good coaches and all that. But oftentimes, I just don't know the whole situation.
Yeah.
And I'm aware of that now. And it didn't necessarily used to be quite as much.
So the only coaches I would judge are the ones that jump to conclusions.
Yeah, you don't know why they're jumping to conclusions because you don't know the situation.
That's right. We should get this mat and you can jump.
You can jump to conclusions. To conclusions.
Yeah, so like a lot of times the coaches I don't want to listen to are the ones that are overly judgmental about other coaches.
There you go.
But
we're older and wiser than we used to be.
Yes. Because you don't know. I mean, you don't know who that coach is programming for. Either, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what you're saying. But even if it's like a blog program, like, you know, I could very well see someone looking at my program for a week and being like, what is this guy thinking? It's mm-hmm. like, well, I'm programming for the athletes in my gym. So if you just showed up on my website last week and you're doing this stuff in your garage, you know, you may find yourself in a world of hurt if it's a high volume week and you haven't been, and you've been doing CrossFit.com up until now.
Mm-hmm.
Or you may have been doing some crazy high volume stuff somewhere and you might catch us on an unloading week. You're like, man, this stuff's easy. I don't think I'm going to get better doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes like if you're not paying attention to what's being said on the blog, you wouldn't know it was an unloading week. You know, you would just show up and go, oh, that wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had someone recently, they switched the competition cycle from regular classes and they were like, oh yeah, this is pretty tough. You know, it's a little bit tougher. I was like, it's an unloading week. So just wait for next week. And they're like, oh.
Oh, they switched from the regular classes to the competition cycle?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And they were like, yeah, this is a little bit tougher. You know, like, I don't understand why this is, you know, it's a little bit tougher, but it's not all everyone else is making it out to be.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, it's an unloading week.
You should go harder.
Well, you go hard, but like, you know, compared to regular class, you're still going hard.
Yeah.
And the volume is pretty much the same during an unloading week. But once they get back on, you know, the regular cycle, then it's like, oh, okay, the volume is different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, snapshot, this happens with the Bulgarian training. We talked about this before. People look at the Bulgarian weightlifters, and they're getting a snapshot of like a few weeks of training.
Mm-hmm.
And they assume they know everything about their program.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, you don't see all the other stuff going on year round.
Yeah. As if every single Bulgarian trained the exact same way that particular coach trained for those athletes that week.
Exactly. We do the same thing every week, forever, with for everybody.
Because everyone in Bulgaria has the same experiences and education.
What else we want to talk about? Yeah, so I guess I would call that blind programming. You know, the athlete selecting a program blindly is like, it's probably not a good idea. You can make better choices. Try to be informed. If you can afford it, hire a coach. You know, at one point, you probably made the jump from training at a 24-hour card swipe fitness facility and paying for a CrossFit membership. You know, you could, if you wanted to, you could take it to the next level again and pay for individualized programming and maybe personal training or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to touch back a little bit on energy systems.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got out of a meeting at Faction where we were talking about, we have like a weekly 1 hour education session.
Yeah. Staff training.
In service. Yeah. So we do that every week at Faction. If you own a gym or something like that,
mm-hmm.
I would recommend you do the same. Have a in service with your coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Doug's in charge of our education at Faction, and he was mm-hmm. talking a little bit today. We were talking about energy systems in regard to food, and you made a really good analogy, and I think it really broke things down. It was like the best analogy I ever heard. For energy systems. So I'm going to let you take it away on that.
The term energy systems gets thrown around a lot. And I think it's hard for people to take those concepts and either figure out what they mean at all, or when they do hear what they mean, to apply them to the real world and to their own training. So the three main energy systems are the phosphagen energy system, which is kind of the short duration, very high power output, very high strength, speed type energy system. You can make a lot of energy very quickly. Energy system number two is the glycolytic energy system, where you can go at kind of a moderate pace for a short period of time, usually on the order of a minute or two. And then the last energy system is the oxidative energy system. And that energy system, you can produce a little bit of energy for a long period of time. And that's generally what's used in most endurance sports. So the parallel that I made, or the analogy that I used when we were talking to our staff today, was metabolism is basically the combination of all the metabolic processes that happen in your body, taking energy from food and kind of rearranging it, so to speak, so you can create movement and heat and the like. So this unit of energy that we use as currency in our body to transfer energy from one place to another is called ATP. So food basically turns into ATP. ATP is the source of energy that goes into your muscles and wherever to help you have energy and to move and exercise and be alive. So like I said before, it's a currency. So the analogy that I used was the analogy of actual, you know, physical currency or money, cash, and the example of a gambler. So everybody has a little bit of those little pieces of energy, those ATP units in their body all the time, ready to break apart and release energy. So if those are units of currency, one ATP is equal to $1, so to speak. And if I'm gambling and I have a handful of cash in my hand, then I can spend that money right away, but it's going to run out like that. Very, very quick. Just like in your body, if I want to run a full speed sprint, all the ATP that I already have built up is going to go away, you know, in, we'll say, 2 to 3 seconds, it'll be gone. But I can regenerate that ATP very quickly by using my phosphagen energy system. So a phosphagen is bound to a creatine. The creatine gives off that phosphagen, and that binds up with the kind of, I'll call it a half ATP for the moment, and it kind of puts it back together, and now that energy is available to use again. So it regenerates that ATP. That's why we supplement with creatine, for example, because it'll make that very short energy system, the energy system that only lasts for 6 to 8 or so seconds, it'll make that energy system last a little bit longer.
We'll say a little more cash in your wallet.
That's right. And so just like having a little more cash in your wallet. So if I'm gambling, I have cash in my hand. It goes away quick. I lost it, but I want more cash in my hand. So I reach my wallet. I pull out more cash. Right? I got cash immediately, but again, I'm going to spend it real fast. It's only going to last for so long. So that's my first energy system. The Phosphagen energy system is like having cash in my wallet. It doesn't last very long, but I can instantly get that money. Right? If I want to keep gambling after I've spent all the money in my hand and in my wallet.
This is how Doug and I gamble, by the way. No winning, yeah, all no spending. Winning,
all spending. So if I run out of money and I want to have more money in my hand, I can run quickly over to the ATM and grab money out of my bank account. But that's only going to last for so long also because that money is just going to go quick. So that's the parallel to the glycolytic energy system where I can get a little bit of energy, or we'll say a moderate amount of energy, for a couple of minutes, again, at 100% effort. That energy system, primarily burns carbohydrates and produces acidity in your muscles. That's the type of energy system that makes your muscles burn. Okay? So you can produce a moderate amount of energy, but only for a minute or two, for the most part. So the parallel there was the ATM. The final energy system is the aerobic pathway, where you can create a little bit of energy very consistently, for a long time. And so back to the gambling analogy, that'd be like having a job where you could basically gamble forever, but you would have to take a lot of time in between, you know, getting the money, coming back to the table, spending it, earning more money, bring it back to the casino, spending it. You could do it for a long time, but it's at a very slow pace.
So what Doug is saying is oxidative system sucks because you have to work. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's really hard work. You don't want to have to do that.
Having a job is stupid.
Right. So you have the three energy systems. Again, you have the Phosphagen energy system, which for any speed or strength, sport or activity, running 100 meter sprint, you know, one RM snatches, any powerlifting or full speed movement is going to primarily use that energy system. And the more you train in that style, the more likely all the things that contribute to that energy system are going to kind of be optimized, and you can make that energy system last a little bit longer, and that energy system can recover a little bit quicker in between sets and from day to day. Okay? Likewise, with the kind of the second energy system where you're burning primarily carbohydrates, that's the energy system where at 100% effort, you could go, 80% full speed for about, we'll say, a minute or two before you have to shut down, slow down, and then, say, if you were running, you would have to go from running to now jogging because you got that muscle burn, and you're kind of tapped out, so to speak. And then the things that kind of help that energy system specifically is anything where you're doing a moderate rep range. If you're doing a heavy set of 20 on back squats, where, again, it's pretty light. You can move the weight pretty easy, but towards the end, you're going to get a big muscle pump and a lot of muscle burning. That's the type of training that's going to help with that energy system specifically. So, and then finally, the last one is more the long, slow duration type activities where you're, again, moving at a relatively slow pace for a long time. So they all have their place, but for the most part, probably the most important pathways to train on a regular basis for CrossFitters are more the high power, high speed, and that intermediate pathway.
Like glycolytic, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're doing like really long things, well, which one is today? Someone was training really, really, really long. Mm-hmm. Like they passed that point of diminishing returns. You know.
Go ahead and elaborate on that.
Bigger's not better. Doing a half hour Metcon every day is not going to help make you better. You might be able to do 30 minutes of conditioning, but you probably want to break that up in intervals, take some rest in between, mm-hmm. and you can make your intervals, you can mess with the ratios for different goals, but you can still do 30 minute conditioning session. It might be better to do 10 minutes of conditioning, 10 minute break, 10 minute conditioning, 10 minute break, something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. That's going to be more effective than just doing one long haul 30 minute conditioning session, mm-hmm. because you'll probably accomplish, say it's a 30 minute AMRAP, you'll accomplish less work mm-hmm. if you go straight through. So, which means that your power output is going to be lower. So mm-hmm. you want to do more work, less time.
Yeah. Generally training the first two energy systems helps out the third.
Right.
Training heavy and very fast at a high pace and getting that muscle burn and all that generally helps you have better endurance. But training just for endurance actually probably hurts the other two rather than helps them in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I'm teaching aerobic training principles class at University of Memphis this semester. And that was one of the things. I mean, I told him like, well, the name of the class is a little bit misleading because we're not going to do hardly any aerobic training here. Like, as you think it, we're not going to go run for an hour. We're not going to get on elliptical. We're not going to do all these things. And I basically had to do like a lecture on, you know, we can train aerobically via the anaerobic pathway. You know, if you're breathing hard, you know, well, we're not going to get too much into that today, but yeah, you don't have to go to get better at running a marathon. You don't have to go run for 4 hours straight. So, and then I think the next podcast we're going to do, we're actually going to talk about performance nutrition. So there's these different energy pathways. And he was talking about optimizing these energy pathways through training and trying to get those positive adaptations. There's also ways to eat to optimize those energy pathways. And it has to do with what to eat and how much to eat and when to eat it and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to cover that in the next podcast. So it'll be mostly just performance nutrition.
I'm also going to cover that in pretty good detail in the free online nutrition course that, again, is going to start up here in the next next few days. If you're watching this years in the future or whatever, it's probably online available to buy in the Fitter store right now. So you can go there and check that out. Just to give you a brief overview of what's going to be in that course, since I didn't talk about that earlier, it's 8 sessions, and it's going to be how to make eating paleo easier, especially if you're a very busy person. You don't have, you know, a bunch of time to spend cooking and to go shopping and whatnot. So I'm trying to save you time by teaching you exactly not only what to eat, but how to make it happen in the real world. Because most people know what to eat. And if you didn't, just eat meat and vegetables and you'll probably be 90% the way there. But just knowing that doesn't make it happen automatically. You have to know how to do it. You have to know, you know, what equipment you need in your kitchen. You have to know how to cook. You have to know how to flavor things so you'll eat them consistently because they taste good. You got to know how to shop and where to shop and how to get good deals so you don't run out of money. You got to know how to eat when you're traveling and you're out at restaurants and you're on the road or you're in hotels or you're flying or whatever. Provide very practical tips on how to eat paleo and not break your diet in all those different situations. So it's more of a how-to seminar rather than is, you know, specifically just one more paleo, you know, seminar. So very practical.
Very good.
Kind of an outline of just how I eat in the real world.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you were interested in what we had to say today about programming and you would like some individualized programming specifically for you, and your goals, go ahead. You can contact us on fitter.tv, FITR.TV. Just click the contact us button or the ask a question button and let us know that you're interested. Send us your email, things like that. I'm going to work on getting something put up in the store where you can just go ahead and purchase it. I do believe here in the beginning, I'm going to want to practice a little bit of a screening process to make sure that we're going to get the athletes that we want a little bit. And make sure that we can. I don't want like 20 people to buy the programming, and then I have to program for 20 people in 1 week. That would be kind of crazy. So I may not put it up in the store immediately. You may just have to contact me. But look in the store. If I don't get overwhelmed, I'll put something in there. All right, guys. See you next time.